The Tiffany lamp. This is actually not a lamp, it's a light fixture. But idea. Okay. So, we talked about the Andy bar. And I wanted to just remember, like, so this is kind of where we're up to, was we had started by comparing different definitions Refersh gives about what love is, right? So one was an ahava. Hang on, that's a different one. Just put them away. That was, okay, well, I have a set in here. We have, to love means to feel one's own being only through and in the being of another. To love God, therefore, means to feel that one's own existence and activity are rendered possible and obtain value and significance only through God and in God. That was from the introductory paragraph of Essay 9. Then on Sina, hatred, which is Essay 15, hatred is the feeling that the existence of any being is a hindrance to our own existence. Right? It's something that is easy to think that we could never feel that way, but as you, like, once Refersh kind of spells it out, you could spot it. Did any of you spot that bit in your own lives about every sin is tied to a lie inside, so right? Sometimes it's not even the sin, it's the opposite. It's like you're doing something that people should see that, right? It's an amazing, amazing insight. So here also, this is a fascinating thing that a person could feel, that if that other person weren't there, my life would run more smoothly. Okay? It sounds terrible. It is terrible. But what's incredible is that it could be. We're basically nice people, and it could be scary to find that in yourself. But better to face that it's there so that you could do something about it than to just go on, like, sort of ignoring the reality and then never growing and changing. Okay? And that the destruction of that being would make our own existence more complete. In other words, it means that we do not feel ourselves whole so long as this or that is still existing. This feeling is the death, nay, the complete inversion of the human heart, which God has created for the comprehensive embrace of all things, but which instead excludes one or all beings to the extent of desiring their non-existence and embraces only itself, in fact becomes a stone. As soon, therefore, as you perceive hatred springing up in your heart against any being, know for sure that you have failed to attain your proper moral level. Okay? Doesn't mean give up hope in yourself, but there's something wrong. So if you feel that feeling, you have to achieve it. He has, I think we're going to get to, there could be a situation where you're not meant to love somebody. Right. There's a Russia. But he does discuss why that's so. Okay. Then on love of other people, on Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, which is number 16, which is now where we're going to start reading inside. I mean, not start, continue. Love all that I have placed by your side. Feel that its existence is necessary for your existence, its welfare for your welfare. Feel even that your existence, your welfare, your vocation is completed only by its existence. Paragraph 119, page 52. Sorry. Okay. So I would be, this is the opposite of sinna. I will be incomplete without that other person. That's ahava. Not only that, and I wish I could remember the Maharal more completely. The Maharal talks about what it means to actually love somebody. How would you know if you love someone? He said it's to want, like, to want the ratzon, tovas chavero. You want what's good for the other person. You want, I can't remember what they are. He has like three things that define it. But the gist of it is, and I suspect it's the source of this Refersh, that not only is my life is more complete if that person is there, and the more successful they are, the better it is for me. The more successful their life is, the better things are for them, the better things are for me. Okay? That is really what happens in love, is that the better things are for you, the better it is for me, which is the opposite of jealousy, right? Where, like, I feel like somehow the more you have, the less I'll have. Okay. So, let your soul be linked with its being. I am the Lord. It's obviously Hashem speaking here. Okay. I am the Lord who loves all and calls upon you, man, to be the instrument of this love. So I want to stop here. That sentence is gorgeous, but a little bit cryptic. Let your soul be linked with its being. I am the Lord. That's the Ohavtala Reyacha Kamocha Ani Hashem. And he's linking, saying, why did the pasuk start talking about love of other people and they have to clinch that together with Ani Hashem? Why is that there? So this, again, the introductory paragraph typically will contain the fundamental principles, which will then be spelled out more completely as the essay goes on. But this is going to be then a key factor in understanding V'ahavta Reyacha Kamocha is Ani Hashem. Those two together. And I like, let your soul be linked with its being is very beautiful and poetic, but what does that mean? How could I let it? Okay, soul, go forth and link to, I don't know, like, can't marry everybody. Like, what is that supposed to mean? Okay, so that's why I brought the Tiffany Lamb picture. I heard from Rav Lef, in a recording from Rav Zev Lef, of Eretz Yisrael. He gave a very amazing mashal. He said, imagine you have a light source, a single, I don't know, a light bulb, and it's putting out light. And then it has this, cover. But that cover, the way he described it was that it has different holes, let's say, punched in it, in different shapes, different angles. I think the Tiffany lamp is like a really helpful example. You see how it's stained glass, right? And the stained glass, that's lead, and then between the panes, each one is like a different pane of glass. And some are red, and some are orange, and some are yellow, and some are green, and some are light blue, and some are amber, and some are transparent, and some of them are triangular, and some of them look sort of like a shape, like a leaf, and some of them are rectangular, and some have a chunk cut out of it. Some are darker, some are lighter. And light is shining through each of these panes, and the panes are on all different angles and all different sides. So when you look there, the closer you study any one pane or any one of these windows, you can learn something about the light that's on the inside, even though you cannot see it. Okay? So you can tell, oh, it has blue frequencies in it. It has red frequencies in it. It has orange. It has this kind of shape, it has this kind of distribution, this kind of propagation. In any one window, you can't actually learn everything there is to know about that white light. But in any one window, you can learn something about that white light. This is a little bit reminiscent of the study of truth, remember? Human being, you study truth, you get one piece, you get another piece, you get another. It's never the whole thing, but it is truth. Okay, and these are for sure related. This is the same concept fundamentally. Okay, we can't understand the Ribono Shel Olam. We do our best to understand what he tells us to convey. We have no way to study him or even really directly his chesed into the world. So the knowledge is very hidden from us. But every person, every human being contains Tzelem Elokim, has a neshama that's a chelek Elokam imah. When you look at a person, when you study a person, when you see, that person is like a window shining Hashem's light out from them. Now, the behavior of the person will block more or less of that light. Okay? If I do a mitzvah, if I listen to the sound of the shofar, okay? Mitzvah d'oraisa, I hear the sound of the shofar. That action is an expression. It turned into the physical world around us, Hashem's ratzon. How do I know? Because Hashem said his ratzon is you should blow the shofar. Well, listen to the shofar. That's written down in the Torah. How do you see it in the actual world when I do it? So my actions, when I do mitzvos, I am actually like giving birth into the world to that Ratzon of Hashem. It's his will. It's his actual will. And you know how a person could see it? By looking at me when I'm doing it. That's an amazing, powerful thing. It's an amazing, powerful aspect of Tzelem Elokim. That me, this person who's enclosed in a very limited physical body, who myself, I don't have the knowledge, the depth of Hashem's Ratzon. You know, the best I could hope for is that Hashem's will is my will. And I'm going to hopefully strive for that by saying, it's my will that Hashem's will should be my will. Because maybe really I don't all the time walk around in a state where Hashem's will is perfectly my will. But at least it could be my will that I should get to that. That's also a very powerful step. And even so, it could be that through me, other people could see Hashem's will and Hashem's light shining into the world. Okay, this is very powerful. It's also true when we look at other people. So, yeah, these little windows that are people are shining Hashem's light into the world. Some of them brighter, some of them darker, some of them in this shape, some of them in that shape. None of them 100%. Okay? But the more we shine that out, the more... So there's no person, kim'at, that if you would look at them, you can... Ezehu chacham halomed mikol adam. You, no matter who you look at, you could hypothetically see in them, right, something of... There's truth there. It doesn't mean every single thing they do is truth. Yeah? But they have the capacity to demonstrate and shine out. This is related to that idea that Hashem bonded together all of humanity through Dea and Dibur. That each person has experience, things that they learn and know, and that they're able to convey and put out. That's another example of a person being this like window through which knowledge of Hashem can come back and forth to other people in the world. You look very...
I'm not puzzled.
Not comfortable. You okay?
Yeah, no, okay. I'm trying to understand.
Okay. Yeah, well, this is like very much on the borderlines of what we could understand. But I think we could understand in a small way, right? If the Torah said, what's an example of an Aseh Dor? The Torah says you should give tzedakah to somebody poor. If I put my hand in my pocket and I take money and I give it to somebody who's poor, what you are seeing is a physical manifestation of Aser to, well, it's not really Aser to Aser. Pasoach tiftach yadcha. You should open your hand to him. You're seeing that in physical action. Those words that are Hashem's words that he spoke. And you're seeing them in my hand. That's an amazing thing. It's a very, very amazing thing and a very wondrous thing. We say Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav, that Hashem made us kadosh through his mitzvos. It's not stam words till you get to the end of the bracha. It's an amazing thing to have 613 mitzvos. To have so many ways, like it's like such a clear kind of window that so many different frequencies of Hashem's light could shine through us. That's a very wondrous and awesome opportunity that we're offered to be able to do that. Okay. And to be able to see that in others. If I want to know what Hashem wants for me, and I'm going to look around. Okay, I'll give you another example of it. When you know a person, maybe a teacher or a parent or a friend, who's really there for you when you need it. Maybe you were unhappy, or maybe you were confused, or maybe you needed a chesed, right? You need somebody to, I don't know, give you notes or to provide a recommendation or, you know, to provide food, whatever it is. And a person came and did that chesed for you. You realize that Hashem does chesed. You learn it from the people in your life. This is another way in which, okay, those people in your life, you're also that person in other people's life. Right? It's a little bit like weird to think of ourselves that way. Sometimes it's like easier to think that everyone else could be the ones that we could learn from them, that Hashem is good and kind, and not realize that we could also be that for other people. It's very important to realize that that's our role. It is our role in life, that when we do that, it's not that we take it for ourselves, it's that we're shining Hashem's light to other people so that they could know that Hashem is good. It gives them something to like hang on to and be able to go forward from there. Okay.
Can I just ask to clarify? Are we saying that when a person does like a mitzvah, then other people seeing that see an expression of Hashem's will and therefore learn to know Hashem more?
Yeah. It's not the purpose of the mitzvah necessarily, but it is one of the things that's happening when you do a mitzvah.
I'm not saying that just by knowing somebody, so then you know Hashem better. Like, just no. Because that
person... you could learn it also from other things, not only mitzvahs. When you know a person and you look at them and you see something good about them, right? Maybe their persistence or their loyalty or their desire to always do what's right, or, you know, there's people who are very good at that, but they're not very good at a lot of stuff. People who always want to do the right thing, they actually always get it wrong. Like, they're never quite right, they never dress quite right, they never act quite right, they never say exactly the right thing. I don't know if you have one of those in your class. Most classes have one. Like, and yet they're so good. Yeah? There's a kind of goodness that you could see there, in these qualities, that itself also gives you somehow more knowledge about the truth. Truth about people, the more you understand people, is also an element of the truth that's there. Bezer Hashem, we'll flip back to that paragraph we saw before, but I have it here just to look back to it. Okay. So, let your soul be linked with its being. Suddenly, it's not so difficult to see that my soul is linked with somebody else's soul. Because we're different angles all windowing the same light. There's a piece of it that you could see through me, and there's a piece of, that's the problem with this picture that I gave you, is that there's so many pieces that seem the same because there's a repeating pattern going around the lamp. Okay, with mankind, there is not a repeating pattern going around. Every single piece is different. Okay, I guess you could say that these are different because one is at this angle, you know, a 25-degree angle from the center, and this is a 45-degree, so just by virtue of that, there's something different about it, and where it's going to shine its light and the shape is going to be different. So maybe you could say that it's an okay representation for a mashal. But every person now, if I understand that my goal in life is on some level to understand Hashem's will as best as I can and then shine that out and perform that out, then all those other people in the world are part of that project with me. Right? If we're all aiming towards Sunday, Umala Ha'aretz De'as Hashem, and that bond of humanity all striving for knowledge and being able to share it with each other, then those other people may not know that that's what they could be doing and achieving, but I could at least begin to understand that there's something they know, that's the Halomid Mikol Adam, there's something that they know about the world, that they know about things that could be helpful to me. The person has a value. Not only do they have some abstract value to the world, but they have a value to me. If I met this person, if I had some encounter with this person, it's not for nothing. There must be something there that I could see, that I could learn, that I could gain, that I wouldn't be able to gain just out of my own experience and my own knowledge and my own things that I heard or said. So, and what is that link that's at the core of all of us? It's really, there's that light that's Hashem's giving and Hashem's chesed that's at the center shining out. That's the Tzelem Elokim, that's the Neshama, that's the Chelek Elokam Imah. So really, we are all bonded. It's not just, how would I bond myself with other people? No, it's only that I have to let it be. I have to allow myself to be aware of that. That really, we are all these like strands, you know, imagine like a tzitzis, and it's, you know how each strand is like twisted of a few strands together. So if it's all frayed together, like to recognize we really are all these strands coming from one core. Each of us has this neshama that's this little strand, this little thread, but really they're all twined together somewhere higher up. We're all part of humanity. We're all, if you imagine a family tree. Yeah, that's the Or Chaim talks about this. He doesn't use the term family tree, but he compares it to a tree. This is mankind is like a tree. You have the Adam HaRishon, you have this trunk, and from it he has children. Each one's a branch. Each of the children has children. These are the smaller and smaller branches. The branches out and out and out and out. Each branch having the same characteristics fundamentally as the parent branch it comes from. Maybe it's smaller, as you read the Sadaris. They're smaller, they're frailer, they're thinner, right? They're weaker. But all each one is like another branch, another branch, another branch, all coming out. This is all of us. All of us together are really these little twigs at the bottom of this, or at the top of this family tree that is all connected together at the source. Okay. So, let your soul be linked with its being. I am the Lord who loves all and calls upon you, man, meaning human, to be the instrument of this love. So he is calling upon us to be the one who materializes, who's the instrument, who makes that love come through. You do that when you show love to other people. Ve'ohavta l'reacha kamocha, ani Hashem. At the root of the love that we're commanded to show to other people is the fact that we are showing them Hashem's love. With this injunction means like a commandment, your God breaks open the seal of your heart and bids you make a covenant of love with everything which bears the stamp of its divine origin and has not given lie to it. He bids you embrace all the children of God with a loving heart. Let's just take a second and look back at paragraph 118. It's on the same page above. It's the last paragraph of sinna, hatred, because you had brought up that question, right? Hate wickedness, but not the wicked man. Okay, because this is the exception. You should have a covenant of love with everything that bears the stamp of its divine origin. A human being, how do we bear the stamp of divine origin? That's called Tzelem Elokim. Yeah, that's Kidmuso. Okay, and has not itself given lie to it. So that's where you would then flip to the sinna, right? That's the only exception. Hate wickedness, but not the wicked man. Only where a wicked man has so identified himself with wickedness. He says, that's my identity, is wickedness. That's who I am. That he is to you the very source of wickedness, where it is difficult to separate the wicked man from the wickedness. Him you may hate, for you hate only the wickedness in him. Such a one, so what's an example? Such a one is the criminal whom you regard as beyond redemption, as one who does evil consciously and deliberately, of whose incorrigibility means like he cannot be cured, he can't be cured, he can't do tshuva, like he's impossible to fix, and premeditation, you have convinced yourself through repeated and fruitless warning and admonition. That doesn't mean you could assume the person's incorrigible. You have to have tried to help them before you could assume, right? Worst of all is the seducer, who is not only wicked himself, that's what we'd call mesi sumidiach, right? He is not only wicked himself, but sows the seeds of wickedness in others and brings it to maturity. In other words, he influences others to do what is truly wrong and bad and evil. And not only that, he cultivates it and helps them along with it. Who sets himself to kill morality and godliness in the soul of even one man, nay, who makes this his only object. So a person who sets his goal as the corruption of other people, such a one has the all-loving God himself excluded from the love and pity of the human heart. So that would be, for example, you have like the Ir HaNidachas, the Mesis Umidiach, right? Somebody that you have an obligation, you have to kill them, right? Such a one you may not love, for in him you love sin itself. And if you love that person, all you'd be doing is loving the sin, because the whole identity, all you could see of that person is the sin, the agent of which he has made himself. He's made himself not an agent of Hashem, but an agent of sin. Then there's, okay, so you understand, without going into like all the halachas over there, there's a concept that there's someone you wouldn't love, but the reason is because they removed themselves from that entire path of love. They're not shining that. They are completely identifying themselves with evil. So in there, they've now taken themselves out from the category of one that you're able to love, because there's all you could see in them is that. Then there's nothing that you could hang on to with the love that's based on the fact that Hashem loves all and wants us to be the instruments of love, which is our common basis underneath. To see in your fellow man something else merely than your rival for the acquisition of good things of the earth. And so this sentence is a little bit like in the negative, so we have to untangle it a drop. Not to look upon his good as an encroachment on yours. To let your neighbor have the spot of earth on which God has set him. Okay, so let's just put this in the positive. Let's put this in the positive. Let's say you are a good person, and you strive to do ve'ohavta l'reacha kamocha. So what have you done? You don't see the person as your rival for the acquisition of good things on earth. You say, no, Hashem has enough for each of us. Whatever he has, that's lovely, okay? He's not competing with me. And you don't look upon his good as an encroachment on yours, okay? He's not taking anything from me by him having more. I can let him have his, and I, right? What is that? Shalom, shalom, v'shali, shali, right? Like, okay? As he has set you on yours, and even to let him prosper on it. I'm such a tzaddikus, I even don't mind if he does well, okay? All this amounts merely to not hating him, not yet to loving him. Yeah, okay? So if hatred meant that I see the person as a barrier to my comfort and success, so the fact that I don't see them that way, that it's okay, they're not a barrier to my comfort and success, that means I don't hate him. That's fantastic. That doesn't mean I love him. We would think that that's enough. There's a lot of people who feel that's enough. You know, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, nobody hurt anybody, that's a lot. We all see that doesn't really generate love by itself. All this amounts merely to not hating him, not yet to loving him. To love your neighbor means to see in him the one condition of your own existence. Without him, I am incomplete. That was, right, where we got stuck for a few months, and now we're back. Of your own welfare, of your fulfilling your mission as man and Israelite. And so, in the desire for your own being and living, to include the desire for your neighbors also. I'll give you a daily example. You come into Shmona Esrei, and you take, we talked about this one time, right? You take the deepest needs that you feel inside, and you get in touch with your with real need. You can't come into a Shmona Esrei feeling like Shalom Aleinu, everything's fine. To come to this Shmona Esrei feeling like there's sickness, there's people who need to be better. As close to myself as I can get in touch with. There's injustice, people who are treated unfairly in the justice system. There's war, there's fear of war. Maybe there's our family or our friends who are under threat of missiles or bombs or, you know, the anti-Semitism all over the world. It's unbelievable what's going on right now. Unbelievable. And how close it is to home, whether we realize it or not. We get all in touch with that, and then we dive in the plural. We stretch our hearts to include everyone else's welfare in our own welfare. And even Hashem's welfare, so to speak. Meaning, this is all Ratzon Hashem, right? That the world would be perfect. You read the Brachos of Shmoneh Esrei, it's a description of the Yemos HaMashiach. You'll have Shoftim back in place as it should be, and Shalom, and Heal Refuah, and the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and Yerushalayim will be rebuilt. This is everyone will have plenty of Parnasa and Bracha, okay? This is Hashem's will as well. So we tie it all together, we stretch it out. This is my own existence, my own welfare, and including the desire for my neighbor as well, and of course stretching it all the way to Ani Hashem, included in that definition of Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, that's the Ve'ahavta es Hashem l'kecha, but seeing that all of these are one and the same in the root. Okay. So here, I just want to stop for a second. This was on fulfilling your mission as a human and Israelite, seeing that the other person is necessary for that. So this is something we looked at briefly. I have a few of these. This is page 27. It's paragraph 54. I actually don't know if you're reading. Okay? It's in the Ahavas Hashem one. They're both called Ahava. This is the one of Ahavas Hashem. To love God with all your heart and mind, with mind and heart, b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshcha, b'chol me'odecha. So seeing over here, levavcha, being your heart, including the mind and heart a little bit together. Meaning it's the interaction between the mind and the heart. It's the lave over here. That is the meaning of lave. To strive and reach God with your mind, employing all the mental faculties which have been lent to you for recognizing God. That's the das, right? That's the dea. The mental faculties which have been lent to you for recognizing God. For learning to know his will as expressed in his law and also his world. Okay, two ways we can know what Hashem's will is. One is it's expressed explicitly in the Torah, by learning Torah. The other is by looking at the world, because Teva is the most constant expression of Hashem's will. Keeps happening day after day, the same thing. That's his will expressed day after day through the laws of nature. Okay, this is why the Rambam describes two ways that a person could come to love Hashem. One is by looking at the world and the universe, and one is by learning Torah. Okay, learning Torah is the better way to do it for many reasons, not just for the from obvious reasons, but for even logical reasons. Those should always be one and the same. Unfortunately, we don't always see them that way. Because you could get misled. I mean, the tricky thing about looking at the world to understand Hashem's will is that the world is olam. Olam is the world, but olam is also ne'elam, hidden. So the world has a tendency, really, it's here to be a giant window showing us Hashem's will. However, it has a tendency that we look at the light fixture and not the light behind it. It acts like a giant curtain or a screen, and it's very easy not to see what's behind it. You could compare it a little, just thinking in terms of the most recent parshas, right? You could look at the paroches and you could see the bottom of the aron sticking out. This was last week. And you could remember that there's influence coming from inside that Kodesh HaKodeshim, that base Kodesh HaKodeshim, outward. You could actually just look at it and just notice the paroches. Okay, that's the thing about looking at the world. It's a little tricky. It's like that on purpose, but it's a little tricky. It's an interesting topic. If you ever want to chase it down, you could look Rav Hirsch's commentary on, it's the end of Parshas Vayera, I think, where it says that Avraham, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. Previously, it says a bunch of times Kel Elyon. From the time he meets Malki Tzedek till over here, he calls out the name of Hashem Kel Elyon. Malki Tzedek says it, and then Avram starts saying it. But over here, it switches to Kel Olam. And refers over there, it's very, very, very interesting. It's based on some of the Mefarshim. You can see them right in Mikras Gedolos, but he explains them out much more. Why to describe Hashem as Kel Olam? And it has to do with this idea. The world hides him, and the world, right? But Avram knew more than anybody about that. Okay. So if the goal is that we wish to reach Hashem, to strive towards Him using the daya that He has given us to recognize Him and to learn His will by looking at Him, then we will see everybody as necessary to the task. Since everyone has something to teach us, now that person is singularly necessary. They can't be replaced, right? To see in Him the one condition of my own existence, like if not for Him, all is lost. Well, that seems extreme. What about the next person? Yeah, but each one is not replaceable. They're all so unique and different, every person, that I can't say that anyone, right? Like, I need all of them. I really do. The indispensable condition of your being, your welfare, and your mission. Who could be so dull as not to feel this? I don't know, maybe me. I have to work at it. Imagine for a moment that all your fellow men whom God has placed at your side have disappeared and that you are alone on the desolate earth. What would be your existence? What pleasure could you have? Still more, what would become of your mission if you were not able to love and do kindnesses? If there were no one to help? You have been created to be a blessing. So you have this mission, right? V'heyei bracha. You're there to be a blessing. And you would have no one who would receive your blessing. So you literally would be unable to perform that which you're born to do. You have been born to do kindnesses. You are meant to support, to sustain, to comfort, to instruct, to nourish, to make happy, to revive. And you would have no one for whom you could all do this. Do you realize the kind of greatness and depth of a Rav Hirsch? I think we're all shocked enough at the sudden thought of like some kind of horrible post-Armageddon dystopian world of like one person left on the planet. I think it's pretty horrifying. He had me convinced. And yet he sees that the deepest horror of it is nobody to do for, nobody to give to. It's not just the loneliness, it's nobody to give to. And he's right. Meaning if I didn't pick up on that, it's only because I didn't, Baruch Hashem, have to experience it. But to have a life where there's no need for the person, this is the biggest terror of all. And do you not see that it is only in association with mankind as a whole that God endows your work with permanence? I'll give you a quick example of that. There's an essay in Chorev on Avelus. In Avelus, he talks about one of the important stages, not the early stages of Avelis, but later on when during the Shiva and the Shloshim, when more people from the community are coming to visit, one of the important things that's happening there is the person being reminded that they're part of something bigger than just themselves, that there is community. Because in halacha, a community never dies. So for example, community can never be considered totally bereft of funds. The bank accounts may be empty, but there's always a way. Okay? Communities don't die. Individuals die. Community lives on. Klal Yisrael, we're the same Klal Yisrael we've always been. It's just been a gradual replacement of parts. Okay? But we're all the same as a nation. So do you not see that it is only in association with mankind as a whole that God endows your work with permanence? If what I do is part of humanity and maybe affects humanity, then what I do is forever. It's forever. Because it has this little ripple into, okay, you have this concept with a person whose parents have passed away, but they're considered like the thigh or the leg of the parent. What does that mean? Meaning they keep on walking and moving forward. You heard this recently?
Racine always brings it up. Brings it up often.
Okay. They keep on moving in the world and keep the... Because the person doesn't die because the family lives on. Okay. This gives a permanence. So think then how badly we need other people. Mankind takes up the work of each individual, and itself undying becomes the heir to it. Without it, your work would be but a dream. But we can go still higher. Okay, so the first level was not to hate, which sounded pretty lofty until he put it that way. Okay, not to feel that the person is encroaching on what's coming to me. Okay, the second level was realizing if people were not here, I'm so grateful they're here. But we can go still higher. There are higher levels of love. I, the Lord, is going back to the psukim and the explanation of psukim, the personification of love, am father of all beings around you, have called them all like you to life and well-being. So just as Hashem called me to life with love, he also called that other person to life with love. If you love me, and because you love me, love my children. Rejoice in their well-being. See in each my work, my child. In his welfare, the prospering of my work and my child. In his woe, the decay of my work, the suffering of my child. Love, therefore, the master in the work, the father in the child. In loving Hashem's children, we demonstrate our love for him. And if we love him, then love his children. Recognize that that person, as smelly and scary and weirdo as they look, they were called to life by God. And there's something there to love. Doesn't mean you have to, like, get too close. You might have to protect yourself.
Okay,
but doesn't mean you have to feel hatred to them.
It seems like this sounds not easy, obviously, but, like, very much doable. But I don't know. Sometimes the reason that you don't like a person is because they're doing something that's like, neged Hashem. And so then I think it's even harder, this line. Hate wickedness, but not the wicked. How can you do that? That's so much more.
To hate just the wickedness without the person. Right, because he says it's only a very extreme case that the person would be so wicked that you would hate them. Right, it's only where there's no distinction at all between the person and their wickedness that you
sometimes
could hate
them. It would annoy you for a person or frustrate you for a person.
Right, that's like itamu chatoim min haaretz. Right, that's, was it Rabbi Meir in Bruria, right, that he was davening that the wicked people should die? And she said, no, it's like itamu chatoim min haaretz. You should daven that they should do tshuva, they should stop sinning. That's, by the way, I think a quick way to like help reframe it in your head. It's like a Bruria. It's like, one second, so I'm hating them, right, because they're so bad. I say, well, the ideal would be if they'd stop doing that. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that helps you to draw a little bit of a line between what they're doing and who they are. Because if they would stop doing it, there's something that could be love there. Yeah? So then you're it. Do you think? Like,
yeah.
I think that's the chachma of what she said, is that it It's not just knowing what to aim for. It's recognizing that you could aspire to that. Sometimes we set our aspirations so low. We don't realize we could really aim for the highest perfection. Okay, so we're going to stop here. We got to this. But there's yet another step above that as well. Okay, so we're up to, we just finished at 122, the end of 122. Mr. Shem will continue. I have to calculate exactly on the calendar, but I want to do a little bit on Purim. So, close to the end of this one. Okay, so it could be we'll even start Purim next time. We'll just finish this off and then start.
I'm looking at pictures of what people do in the school, like after 3:45. Do you mind if I take a picture?